Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. This episode, on Thursday, December 18th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will try to focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. Our first story, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly has lawyers ready if the DOD takes action against him, by Jared McDonald Evoy, December 15, 2025. Attorneys representing U.S. Senator Mark Kelly said they will take all appropriate legal action if the Department of Defense takes any action against the Arizona Democrat for a video in which Kelly and several other lawmakers said that military members are not required to follow orders that violate the law. The letter, obtained by Punchbowl News, was sent to John Phelan, the Secretary of the Navy, in response to the Department of Defense, which recently announced it was escalating its review of the senator into an official command investigation. Last month, Kelly, along with six other Democratic lawmakers, posted a video on social media telling members of the military that they are not required to follow orders that violate the law, spurring anger from Republicans and specifically President Donald Trump. Seditious behavior punishable by death, Trump posted in response to the video. A report has been submitted to the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, making recommendations on possible punishments, but it is unclear what those recommendations are. To be clear, there is no legitimate basis for any type of proceeding against Senator Kelly, and any such effort would be unconstitutional and an extraordinary abuse of power, Attorney Paul J. Fishman says in the letter. If the executive branch were to move forward in any forum, criminal, disciplinary, or administrative, we will take all appropriate legal action on Senator Kelly's behalf to halt the administration's unprecedented and dangerous overreach. Members of Congress are often granted constitutional protections for speech and debate, and it is still unclear how the military review and threat of court-martial by the DOD would impact those protections. It should send a shiver down the spine of every patriotic American that the President and Secretary of Defense would abuse their power to come after me or anyone this way, Kelly said in a Monday statement after the Department of Defense announced it was escalating the review. It wasn't enough for Donald Trump to say I should be hanged. It wasn't enough for Pete Hegseth to threaten me with a court-martial. Now they are threatening everything I fought and served for across 25 years in the U.S. Navy, all because I repeated something every service member is taught. From 1987 to 2012, Kelly served as an aviator in the United States Navy, where he was deployed as part of Operation Desert Storm during the first Gulf War. Prior to his retirement from military service, he reached the rank of captain and would later go on to become an astronaut with NASA. The other six Democratic lawmakers in the video also served in the military or intelligence communities. They said that Americans in those institutions can and must refuse illegal orders. No one has to carry out orders that violate the law or our Constitution. We know this is hard and that it's a difficult time to be a public servant, they said. But whether you're serving in the CIA, in the Army or Navy or the Air Force, your vigilance is critical. When announcing their investigation into Kelly, the DOD said the military retirees remain subject to the UCMJ for applicable offenses and federal laws such as 18 U.S.C. 2387 prohibit actions intended to interfere with the loyalty, morale, or good order and discipline of the armed forces. The statement added that all service members have a legal obligation under the UCMJ to obey lawful orders and that orders are presumed to be lawful. A service member's personal philosophy does not justify or excuse the disobedience of an otherwise lawful order. That concludes this first story. Arizona Senator Mark Kelly has lawyers ready if the DOD takes action against him. Moving on to elections, state lawmaker Joseph Chaplick enters race for Arizona's Congressional District 1. By Jared McDonald Evoy, December 15, 2025. Scottsdale Republican State Representative Joseph Chaplick announced he is entering the race for Arizona's Congressional District 1 to replace U.S. Representative David Schweikert and will go head-to-head with Chair of the State GOP, Gina Swoboda, in the upcoming primary. On Monday, Chaplick, a member of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus, announced he would be running for the seat, touting the endorsements of a number of big names in the MAGA movement. However, notably missing is President Donald Trump, who has already endorsed Swoboda. Schweikert announced earlier this year that he would not run for re-election in Congressional District 1 and is instead seeking his party's nomination to face off against Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs next year. CD1 is the state's wealthiest district, covering large areas of Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, and Fountain Hills. Chaplick has been a lawmaker at the Arizona State Legislature since 2019 and is one of 10 people who have filed statements of interest with the Arizona Secretary of State to run for the congressional seat in the August primary. Chaplick and Swoboda are the most recognizable names that have announced runs so far. As a businessman and conservative, I know what it takes to balance a budget, to fight for families and small businesses, and to uphold the freedoms that make Arizona and America great, Chaplick said in a written statement accompanying the announcement. I look forward to continuing Trump's America First policy fight in Congress. Our freedom and liberties are at stake. Among Chaplick's endorsements is former Republican State Representative Austin Smith, who pleaded guilty last month to charges that he personally forged more than 100 signatures on his petitions for re-election. Chaplick, who chaired the House Ethics Committee at the time Smith was accused of forgery, dropped a complaint that the Democratic lawmakers brought against Smith, a former member of the Arizona Freedom Caucus. Chaplick has also amplified conspiracy theories online and in committee. CD1 leans Republican, but is among the state's most competitive districts and has for years been a target for national Democrats who hope to flip the seat. Last cycle, Schweikert got 52% of the votes, while his Democratic opponent, former state lawmaker Amish Shah, won 48%. Shah is running for his party's nomination for the seat again next year. Both parties are making the district a top priority as Republicans are seeking to maintain their 6-seat majority over Democrats who are looking to weaponize President Trump's low approval ratings and the economy against their GOP rivals. However, Republicans will have their own infighting to contend with, as Swoboda's candidacy has been met with vitriol from some of the party's more far-right members. Swoboda said that Arizona's school voucher program should have some guardrails after it came under fire for luxury purchases from parents, like diamond rings and smartphones. Those comments alienated supporters of the voucher system, including Turning Point USA and the Arizona Freedom Caucus. And that concludes this election update. State lawmaker Joseph Chaplick enters race for Arizona's Congressional District 1. Next up, whole milk back on school lunch menus under bill on its way to Trump. By Shawneen Miranda, December 15th, 2025. school cafeterias got a step closer to seeing whole milk again after the U.S. House passed a measure Monday to restore the dairy staple to school lunches. The bill unanimously passed the Senate back in November and now heads to President Donald Trump's desk. The bipartisan effort, which passed the House by voice vote, came after whole milk was barred from school meal programs for more than a decade, amid a broader push to curb childhood obesity. Under the bill, schools that participate in the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National School Lunch Program would be allowed to offer flavored and unflavored organic or non-organic whole, reduced-fat, low-fat, and fat-free fluid milk, and lactose-free fluid milk, as well as non-dairy beverages that are nutritionally equivalent to fluid milk and meet the nutritional standards established by the Secretary. The bill would also exempt milk fat from being considered a saturated fat as it applies to schools' allowable average of saturated fat content of a meal. The measure allows parents and guardians, on top of physicians, to offer a written statement for their students to receive a non-dairy milk substitute. GOP Senators Roger Marshall of Kansas and David McCormick of Pennsylvania, along with Democratic Senators Peter Welch of Vermont and John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, introduced the measure in the Senate in January. Republican Representative Glenn G.T. Thompson of Pennsylvania and Democratic Representative Kim Schreier of Washington State brought corresponding legislation in the House. An essential building block. During floor debate Monday, Thompson, who chairs the House Agriculture Committee, said the bill's purpose is to restore students' access to a wide variety of milk options, ensuring the students have the necessary nutrients to learn and to grow. Thompson said milk is an essential building block for a well-rounded and balanced diet, offering 13 essential nutrients and numerous health benefits, but that, unfortunately, out-of-touch and outdated federal regulations have imposed restrictions on the types of milk students have access to in school meals. Thompson pointed out that the bill does not require any students to drink or any school to serve whole milk, and instead simply give schools the flexibility to serve a broader variety of milk in the school lunchroom. But Representative Bobby Scott, ranking member of the House Committee on Education and Workforce, voiced his opposition, saying that while the bill does make some improvements to the whole milk debate with its inclusion of better options for students seeking non-dairy alternatives, he remains disappointed with the bill overall, that it would make school meals less healthy. The Virginia Democrat said the bill goes against the dairy industry's stated commitment to ensure that students have access to the healthiest dairy options, consistent with USDA's and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services dietary guidelines for Americans. Milk industry praise. The top five milk-producing states in 2023 were California, Wisconsin, Idaho, Texas, and New York, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service. Michael Dykes, president and CEO of the International Dairy Foods Association, celebrated the House passage of the bill, which he dubbed a defining victory for children's health and for the dairy community that has fought for more than a decade to restore whole and 2% milk for our nation's students. Dykes urged Trump to sign the bill into law so that USDA can begin working with state governments and school districts across the country to make this law a reality. That concludes this story, Whole Milk Back on School Lunch Menus Under Bill on Its Way to Trump. Our next story, no U.S. House vote to extend health care subsidies, Speaker Johnson says, by Jennifer Shute, December 16, 2025. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Tuesday he will not allow a floor vote this week on a bipartisan amendment supported by moderate Republicans that would extend the Affordable Care Act enhanced tax credits. Johnson was confident that blocking the amendment would not lead centrist GOP lawmakers to oppose the Republican health care bill scheduled to get a vote Wednesday. There's about a dozen members in the conference that are in these swing districts who are fighting hard to make sure they reduce costs for all of their constituents, and many of them did want to vote on this Obamacare, COVID-era subsidy the Democrats created, Johnson said. We looked for a way to try to allow for that pressure release valve, and it just was not to be. The enhanced ACA tax credits are set to expire at the end of the year, sharply increasing the cost of health insurance for the roughly 22 million Americans who purchase plans through the exchange and benefit from the subsidies. The House Republican health care bill wouldn't extend those tax credits, frustrating GOP lawmakers in that chamber who are most at risk of losing their re-election bids during the November midterm elections. Johnson said he expects that GOP bill will pass, though he didn't address its prospects in the Senate, where bipartisanship is needed for nearly all bills to advance under that chamber's 60-vote legislative filibuster. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office and the staff of the Joint Committee on Taxation's analysis of the bill shows it would reduce the federal deficit by $35.6 billion during the next decade. An average of 100,000 people would lose health insurance between 2027 and 2035, while premiums for health insurance would drop by 11% on average through 2035, according to the joint analysis. Idiotic and shameful. New York Republican Representative Mike Lawler said in a speech on the House floor that GOP leaders' decision to let the enhanced ACA tax credits expire was, quote, idiotic and shameful, especially after changes were added to address fraud and reduce costs. So we have been forced to sign on to two discharge petitions, he said, and yet my Democratic colleagues will not join us, but for those that were at the negotiating table. Lawler then criticized House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York for not encouraging Democrats to sign on to the bipartisan discharge petition, noting that it would likely get the 218 signatures needed to force a floor vote. He argued that because Jeffries, quote, doesn't actually want to solve the problem, he wants the issue. This place is disgraceful, Lawler said. Everybody wants the upper hand. Everybody wants the political advantage. They don't actually want to do the damn work. This problem could be solved today if everybody who says they care about extending this signs the discharge. GOP-only bill in 2026? When the House returns from its two-week holiday break next year, Johnson said, leaders may try to use the complex reconciliation process they used to enact the One Big Beautiful Bill to address health care. What we anticipate going into the first quarter of next year is, possibly in a reconciliation package or in regular order, a standalone, ideas just like this, Johnson said, after being asked a question about health savings accounts. We have a long list of things that we know will reduce premiums, increase access, and quality of care. President Donald Trump said Monday he wants Republicans to use the reconciliation process or to eliminate the Senate's legislative filibuster to address health care and other policy priorities. Republicans should knock out the filibuster and we should approve a lot of things, Trump said. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, a Republican of South Dakota, has said repeatedly he doesn't intend to change or scrap the filibuster. Direct payments or tax breaks. Trump also reiterated during the Oval Office event he would like to see Congress send direct payments to Americans to help them buy health insurance or afford health care. I want all money going to the people, and let the people buy their own health care. It'll be unbelievable, Trump said. They'll do a great job. They'll get much better health care at a much lower cost. The Senate voted last week on two health care bills, one from Republicans and one from Democrats, but neither received the support needed to move toward a final passage vote. Republicans' bill would have provided direct payments to some people enrolled in either bronze or catastrophic ACA marketplace plans with up to $1,500 in payments annually for 2026 and 2027. Democrats' legislation would have extended the enhanced ACA marketplace tax credits for 3 years. Cost most urgent, poll finds. A bipartisan group of senators is trying to find solutions that bridge the political divide, though they are unlikely to achieve consensus on the details before the end of this week. Thune said during a press conference Tuesday he believes there is a way to address the rising costs of health care if Democrats continue negotiations with Republicans. Our views on health care and the Democratic views on health care are very different, and I think that's a difficult challenge that we have to figure out how to overcome, Thune said. But if they're willing to accept changes that actually would put more power and control and resources in the hands of the American people and less of that in the pockets of the insurance companies, then I think there is a path forward. Thune acknowledged that Congress cannot pass anything this week, but said he believes there's a potential pathway in January if Democrats are willing to come to the table on things that will actually drive down the cost of health care. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, didn't entirely rule out using the January 30th government funding deadline to force a partial shutdown over health care, though he implied nothing can be done on the ACA tax credits after they expire at the end of December. Once it expires, the toothpaste is out of the tube, Schumer said. A poll released Monday by the West Health Gallup Center on Healthcare in America shows that cost is the most urgent health issue facing the country, followed by access and then obesity. Just 57% of those polled said they were satisfied with how much they pay for their own health care, and only 16% were satisfied with the total cost of health care. Nearly two-thirds of those in the survey said they believe it's the federal government's responsibility to make sure all Americans have health care coverage, while 33% said it's not. That concludes this story. No U.S. House vote to extend health care subsidies, Speaker Johnson says. Our next story, Trump very strongly considering loosening federal marijuana regulations, by Jacob Fischler, December 15, 2025. President Donald Trump's administration is looking, quote, very strongly at reclassifying cannabis from the strictest category of controlled substances, Trump said Monday. In a brief affirmative response to a reporter's question in the Oval Office, the president confirmed he is considering a reclassification of marijuana to unlock research funding. A lot of people want to see it, the reclassification, because it leads to tremendous amounts of research that can't be done unless you reclassify, Trump said. So we are looking at that very strongly. Marijuana is considered a Schedule I drug under the Food and Drug Administration's classification of controlled substances. The FDA defines drugs on the list, such as heroin and cocaine, as lacking any medicinal value and carrying a likelihood of abuse. The designation carries a host of consequences, including a virtual ban on funding research for medicinal or other uses of the drug. While marijuana use, both medicinal and recreational, is legal in many states, it remains illegal to possess or use in any amount for any reason under federal law. Advocates have sought for decades to legalize or decriminalize the drug, which many see as less harmful than other Schedule I substances. The growing split in recent years among many states and federal laws has ramped up pressure on federal policymakers to alter the drug's legal status. Marijuana businesses in states where it is legal lack access to financial institutions, which cannot lend to businesses considered illegal by federal authorities. States, meanwhile, have had difficulty regulating the environmental and health aspects of their industries. And lawmakers, especially Democrats, have increasingly highlighted the frequent injustice of marijuana prosecutions that disproportionately affect communities of color and poor communities, though the drug is widely used across race and economic status. That concludes this story, Trump very strongly considering loosening federal marijuana regulations. Next up, Republicans could gain nearly 200 state legislative seats in voting rights case, report finds, by Jonathan Shorman, December 15, 2025. Republicans could gain nearly 200 state legislative seats across the South if the U.S. Supreme Court guts a key provision of the Federal Voting Rights Act, a new analysis finds. The bulk of the gains would be concentrated in 10 GOP-controlled state legislatures in southern states, according to the analysis produced by Fair Fight Action, a Georgia-based progressive voting rights group in partnership with Black Voters Matter Fund, which advocates on behalf of Black voters. The analysis, featured in a report released by the groups on Monday, underscores the alarm among progressives over the potential consequences of the Supreme Court's looming decision in a case known as Louisiana versus Calais. While the case centers on the constitutionality of Louisiana's congressional map, the effects of the decision could extend into state houses across the country. The Supreme Court's conservative majority appears likely to severely weaken Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, a landmark 1965 civil rights law that bans racial discrimination in voting access. Section 2 restricts racial gerrymandering and until now has limited power of lawmakers to draw districts that dilute the voting power of racial minority voters. A sweeping decision by the court could give state lawmakers a freer hand to draw congressional and state legislative districts that dilute the power of minority voters, as well as districts for local governments such as county commissions, city councils, and school boards. The justices held oral arguments in October. A decision could come at any time. At the state legislative level, a court ruling that strikes down Section 2 could lead to Democrats losing about 191 seats, according to the analysis, which examined how state legislative districts could be redrawn if Section 2 is no longer in place. Most of those seats are currently held by Black lawmakers in districts where minority voters make up majority of residents. What they're doing is providing a fatal blow to Black representation in the South, Fair Fight Action CEO Laura Groh Wargo said in an interview. The total number of legislative districts in 10 southern states where Black or Hispanic voters comprise a majority could fall from 342 to 202. Those states are Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. Some Republican states argue that courts have interpreted Section 2's protections too broadly and in the process wrongly restrained the ability of lawmakers to draw favorable maps. Alabama and 13 other GOP states said in a brief filed with the Supreme Court earlier this year that Section 2 has been turned into, quote, the proverbial golden hammer, wielded by plaintiffs and courts in a never-ending search for a nail. If the Supreme Court weakens the Voting Rights Act, It's unclear whether state legislatures would pursue mid-decade redraws of state legislative districts. Redistricting typically occurs every 10 years following the census. At the federal level, a previous analysis by Fair Fight Action and Black Voters Matter Fund projected Republicans could draw an additional 19 U.S. House seats if Section 2 protections were removed. While a few states have passed new congressional maps already this year, those efforts have proven highly controversial. Some states, such as Indiana and Kansas, have abandoned or rejected them for now. And that concludes this story. Republicans could gain nearly 200 state legislative seats in voting rights case, report finds. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Next up, Arizona Senate Republican plan for 2026 focuses on affordability. GOP lawmakers use spurious study to claim people are fleeing the Democratic governor's policies. By Caitlin Sievers, December 16, 2025. Arizona's Senate Republican leaders say in the coming year they'll be focused on lowering costs, making communities safer, and keeping the state's economy competitive. In a lengthy list of priorities for the state legislative session that begins January 12th, Senate Republicans heaped praise on President Donald Trump and heavily criticized Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs, who is running for re-election in 2026. Arizonans want affordable living, safe neighborhoods, and a government that strengthens, not weakens, our economy, Senate President Warren Peterson, a Republican from Gilbert, said in a statement. While the governor's vetoes stall progress, Senate Republicans remain focused on protecting taxpayers, upholding Arizona's freedoms, and preventing the radical left from turning our state into California. In a Monday press statement issued alongside their plan for 2026, Senate Republicans claimed that more Arizonans are moving out of the state than into it, a change they blamed on policies put in place by Hobbs, who took the governor's seat in 2023. But the so-called study that they referenced was conducted by the moving company Atlas Van Lines and included only the people who hired the company to help them move. In its press release about the study and on its website, the Evansville, Indiana-based moving company provided only percentages for their customers move in and out of the state, with no data showing the totals of people the company moved in or out of Arizona over the past year. There was no contact information included in the press release for questions about the report, and the only number listed on the Atlas website exclusively directs callers to salespeople. The most recent report from the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity conflicts with the moving company's claims and was published alongside a detailed breakdown of its methodology. Arizona is thriving under Governor Hobbs' leadership, with about 97,000 new residents added in the past year, a 1.2% growth rate, and Maricopa County ranking number one in the United States for net migration, Liliana Soto, a spokesperson for Hobbs, told the Arizona Mirror. Arizona's economy is strong, with 9 consecutive months of labor force growth and a 4.2% unemployment rate, which is below the national average. This shows not just population growth, but also robust job creation. Senate Republicans said that people are fleeing the Grand Canyon state because of Hobbs' vetoes of their legislation and because of high housing prices that they blamed on the governor, a claim the governor's office rejected. While the Senate Majority Caucus makes baseless claims and roots against Arizona's success, the facts speak for themselves, Soto said. We are a top state for private sector job growth, making real progress on affordable housing, water security, and creating opportunities for all Arizonans, regardless of their zip code. The governor is focused on results, not rhetoric. We urge the caucus to channel this same energy into passing her middle-class tax cuts package if they truly care about providing relief to families struggling with rising costs and the increased cost of living. Senate Minority Leader Priya Sundaresan told the Mirror that the Republicans were, quote, cherry-picking data to match their hypothesis, and that if they worked with Democrats to better fund public education, to stop corporations from buying up housing stock, and protect the state's water future, they could make Arizona a more attractive place to call home. Sundaresan told the Mirror that the Democrats also plan to focus in the upcoming legislative session on making life more affordable for Arizonans, and will release their own plan for 2026 in the next few weeks. I'm very glad to see that one of their Republican caucus priorities is affordability issues, because that's absolutely what the Democratic caucuses will be focused on, she said. And so to the extent that we can find some common ground and achieve some cost of living savings, I'd love to see that. Sundaresan acknowledged the Republican caucus's assertion that inflation was on the rise during Joe Biden's presidency, but disagreed that Trump is, quote, working to bring prices down. Unfortunately, President Donald Trump's policies have done nothing to reduce inflation and have only served to worsen it, because the tariffs that Trump has imposed are, in fact, taxes on everyday products that Arizonans rely on, she said. So I don't see where President Trump or Republican policies to date are doing anything to reduce inflation. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said earlier this month that reports of higher-than-expected inflation are mostly due to Trump's tariffs. Inflation across the country increased 1.7% from January to September, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Senate Republicans' affordability plan for the coming year includes tax cuts based on the strongest parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill passed by Trump and congressional Republicans. Included in that bill, which was passed in early July, was the cessation of the Affordable Care Act expanded tax credits, a move that is extremely unpopular and is expected to cause skyrocketing health insurance costs that may force many to go without. Republicans did not address the ACA insurance costs, but said their plan would make life generally more affordable through tax cuts. We'll pair these reforms with disciplined budgeting and a commitment to shrinking government, so Arizona families can finally start regaining the financial breathing room they've lost, Senate Republicans said in their plan. The Republican caucus also plans to get rid of regulations they say slow down the building process, to increase the state's housing supply, and put home ownership in reach for more young adults and working families. We're committed to increasing supply responsibly, aligning water and housing policy with actual data, and ensuring local governments aren't blocking the construction of attainable homes, the Republican caucus said. Arizona families deserve a fair shot at home ownership, not a market stacked against them. Arizona's water policy dates back to 1980 and requires certain industries and areas of the state, including home construction in the valley, to prove they have a 100-year supply of good quality water before they can begin subdividing land for new building. In 2023, home builders were outraged when Hobbs put a moratorium on residential development that relied only on groundwater in parts of Queen Creek, Goodyear, and Buckeye, even as the state faced a severe housing shortage. The moratorium was prompted by an updated hydrological model for the Phoenix metro area, which projected a 4% shortfall in its 100-year water supply. Arizonans can't afford policies that stall development, inflate housing prices, or jeopardize our water security, Senate President Pro Temp T.J. Shope said in the statement. While the governor creates uncertainty and bottlenecks, Senate Republicans are advancing practical, data-driven solutions that support responsible growth and keep Arizona livable for the next generation. Sundaration told the Mirror that discourse about the moratorium was often misleading, since developments in the heart of Phoenix and other areas of the valley could still move forward, as could any project served by a water provider that has its own 100-year water supply certificate. The Arizona Department of Water Resources uses complex hydrological modeling that takes into account current and projected future water usage, as well as water recharge, to help determine whether a proposed development is eligible for a certificate of assured water supply. Hobbs, along with Democrats and Republicans in the legislature, have said water was a top priority for the past 2 years, and the need for new regulation is even more urgent this year as Arizona fights with other states for its share of Colorado River water. The Colorado River supplies about 35% of Arizona's water. For the most part, progress on water legislation stalled over the past few years when Republicans and Democrats couldn't agree on what it should look like, with Republicans looking for fewer restrictions and Democrats saying more were necessary. But a bipartisan group of legislators and Hobbs earlier this year finally passed an ag-to-urban law that allows farmers in increasingly urban areas to retire their land and its grandfathered irrigation rights to be used for development that wouldn't have to meet the traditional 100-year supply rules. Proponents of the law say that any residential development would use significantly less water than irrigated farmland. Other top priorities for the Senate Republicans in 2026 include major reforms to the state's justice system in response to a spike in inmate homicides, assisting the federal government in its immigration crackdown by supporting our sheriffs, bolstering state enforcement efforts, and ensuring Arizona remains a strong partner in maintaining border security, supporting the state's $1 billion school voucher program, along with safeguards that keep inappropriate content out of schools, and banning trans students from bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender identities. Extending Proposition 123, which provides about $300 million a year to public schools through the State Land Trust. An election reform resolution they plan to send to voters to bypass a veto from Hobbs that would make voting by mail more difficult in the name of election integrity. Regulating artificial intelligence by advancing safeguards that prevent deepfake abuse, protect children online, and ensure state agencies use AI responsibly and transparently. Reforms to the family court system, including more accountability for judges. Increased oversight for the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid system, also known as AHCCCS, and the Arizona Department of Health Services, which Senate Republicans said have been plagued by fraud, waste, and catastrophic oversight breakdowns, from contractors exploiting Medicaid dollars to DCS failures that left children in danger and allowed politically connected insiders to benefit from pay-to-play schemes. And that concludes this story, Arizona Senate Republican Plan for 2026, focuses on affordability. Next, we turn to a story on immigration. An ever larger share of ICE's arrested immigrants have no criminal record. Convicted criminals now make up smaller share of arrests as immigration violations alone drive more detentions. By Tim Henderson, December 12, 2025. Immigration arrests under the Trump administration continued to increase through mid-October, reaching rates of more than 30,000 a month. But rather than the convicted criminals the administration has said it's focused on, an ever larger share of those arrests were for solely immigration violations. In 45 states, immigration arrests more than doubled compared with the same period last year during the Biden administration. The largest increases: there were 1,190 arrests in the District of Columbia, compared with just 7 last year under the Biden administration. Arrests were also more than 5 times higher in New Mexico, Idaho, Oregon, and Virginia. The result stands in contrast to the administration's objective of arresting the, quote, worst of the worst, said Ariel Ruiz Soto, a senior policy analyst at the nonpartisan Migration Policy Institute. Heightened enforcement is likely increasing collateral arrests of people found during searches for convicted criminals, he said. Comparisons between the Trump and Biden administrations were calculated by Stateline in an analysis of data released by the Deportation Data Project, a research initiative by the Universities of California at Berkeley and Los Angeles. About 93% of arrests could be identified by state. While more people were arrested this year, a lower percentage are convicted criminals. The share of arrested immigrants who had been convicted of violent crimes has dropped from 9% in January to less than 5% in October. The share under Biden was consistently between 10% and 11% during the same period in 2024. The same trend applies to people arrested solely on immigration violations. Immigration violations alone were behind 20% in April, then rose to 44% of arrests in October, according to Stateline's analysis. In some states in the District of Columbia, a majority of arrests were for immigration violations alone. The District of Columbia, 80%. New York, 61%. Virginia, 57%. Illinois, 53%. West Virginia, 51%. And Maryland, 50%. States with high immigrant populations also saw the most arrests this year. The largest numeric increases were in Texas, up 29,403, triple last year's figure. Florida, up 14,693, a fourfold increase. And California, up 13,345, a fourfold increase. And there is a map in this story that shows color-coded the share of arrests with criminal convictions under President Trump. The two states with the largest arrest rate increases have responded very differently to President Donald Trump's deportation mission. We're going to resist, like all of the Democratic states, New Mexico Democratic Governor Mitchell Lujan Grisham said in an interview with the Santa Fe New Mexican after last year's election, referring to mass deportation plans. She proposed legislation to ban U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention facilities in the state. The legislation failed this year, but Lujan Grisham urged the state legislature to reconsider next year. The state has 3 privately run ICE detention centers with the capacity for 2,000 people. Idaho's Republican Governor Brad Little is helping ICE under a 287G agreement by transporting what his office calls highly dangerous illegal alien criminals from county jails to federal custody. The 53 men pictured on the governor's website have charges ranging from drug possession to sexual assault. In a news release, the office said the program is intended to take people after the completion of their sentences through an October review by the Ohio Capital Sun, found some were transported despite dismissed or still pending charges. Nationally, arrests have increased this year from around 17,000 in February, the first full month of President Donald Trump's current term, to more than 30,000 in September and October. The share of convicted criminals has dropped from 46% to 30%, though the number of convicted criminals arrested still has been higher each month than under President Joe Biden. Some of the policies that have fed increased arrest numbers face new court battles. This month, a federal judge blocked the administration from making immigration arrests in the District of Columbia without warrants or probable cause. In August, a federal court blocked the administration's expansion of expedited removal, which itself allows fast deportations without judicial review. The administration has appealed, arguing that immigrants who have been in the country for less than 2 years without legal authorization are not guaranteed due process. Such fast deportations could be used on 2.5 million people, according to a Migration Policy Institute estimate published in September, including 1 million people released at the border with Mexico with court dates and 1.5 million people with temporary protections such as humanitarian parole. This fall, the share of arrested immigrants with criminal convictions continued to decrease just before and during the federal government shutdown, with only 3% of those arrested and detained having convictions between September 21 and November 16th, according to national information analyzed by Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse, TRAC TRAC, a data research organization at Syracuse University. While ICE is detaining more and more individuals, targeting has shifted sharply to individuals without any criminal convictions, the TRAC report noted. And that concludes this story. An ever larger share of ICE-arrested immigrants have no criminal record. And our final story, U.S. Senate Democrats warn of fallout from Trump Education Department transfers, by Shaunine Miranda, December 17, 2025. U.S. Senate Democrats on Tuesday blasted ongoing efforts from President Donald Trump's administration to dismantle the Department of Education, including plans to shift several of its responsibilities to other cabinet-level agencies. Hawaii Senator Mazie Hirono hosted a forum on the issue with several Democratic colleagues. The lawmakers, joined by education leaders, advocates, and leading labor union voices, said the restructuring would lead to a loss of expertise, create more bureaucracy, and weaken support for students and families. The administration announced 6 agreements in November with the Departments of Labor, Interior, Health and Human Services, and State as part of a larger effort from the administration to dismantle the 46-year-old Education Department. Trump has sought to axe the agency in his quest to send education, quote, back to the states, and tapped Education Secretary Linda McMahon to fulfill that mission. Much of the funding and oversight of schools already occurs at the state and local levels. Losing expertise. Senator Elizabeth Warren slammed the transfers as illegal because of federal laws assigning specific responsibilities to the Education Department. Congress already passed the laws on this, she said. Every one of the programs that's moving out of the Department of Education specifically says we have money allocated for a program in the Department of Education, not in whatever random other place Secretary McMahon decides to put it. The Massachusetts Democrat said that if the transfers go through, we've got now 4 federal agencies that have no experience with education suddenly in charge of more than 50 different educational programs, including ones that fund literacy, education for veterans, kids in rural school districts, you name it, it's moving somewhere else. Even before the announcements of interagency agreements, the Education Department had seen several changes since Trump took office, including layoffs of hundreds of employees that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in July could temporarily proceed. In a late Tuesday statement to State's newsroom, Department spokesperson Mady Biderman said the transfers were part of a wider effort to initiate a sorely needed overhaul of the federal education bureaucracy. The opposition is protecting a system that produces dismal results for our students, she said. The Trump administration demands better than the status quo. Nothing but chaos. Under one of the agreements, the Education Department said the Labor Department would take on a greater role in administering elementary and secondary education programs currently managed under the Education Department's Office of Elementary and Secondary Education. Rachel Gittleman, president of the American Federation of Government Employees Local 252, which represents Education Department workers, said, "Nobody wins, the least of all students and educators, when the Labor Department takes on massive education programs," noting the current workforce at education has the right experience. "Our staff have decades of experience with the complicated programs we're talking about today," Gittleman said. "These moves will cause nothing but chaos and harm for the people they're intended to help." Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, also rebuked the administration's efforts to gut the agency. "What is happening here is not simply the dismantlement of the Department of Education," she said. "It is taking away, it is abandoning the federal role in education." Weingarten, who leads one of the largest teachers' unions in the country, added that we should be, as a nation, expanding the federal role in public education, not supplanting states. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on Demand Podcasts. You can also get our stream and podcasts on our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones, or listen on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. Thanks so much for joining us this week. We'd like to wish all our listeners who are celebrating a very happy Hanukkah. And stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.